Welcome to the HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the front page of Hacker News. It's May 5th, 2025, and this is deep dive number 25. We've sifted through today's top posts just for you.
And we've got quite a mix today. Five really interesting articles.
We do. We're looking at the death of daydreaming, then the vocal effects of Daft Punk, which should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got evolving OpenAI structure, a look at AI meets WinDBG, and finally, an interesting take from an LLM user who says they don't actually use generative LLMs that often.
Right. It sounds like a random collection maybe, but I think there's a real thread connecting them.
Exactly. It's all about, well, our relationship with technology, creativity, AI. It's all intertwined, really.
Definitely. So where should we start? The death of daydreaming.
Yeah, let's dive into that. Christine Rosen's article really struck a chord, didn't it?
It did. Her main point is that constant buzz from our phones, all the tech stimulation, it's basically killing off boredom, those little moments of nothing where your mind just wanders.
And it's not just kids, right? John Haidt's observation was that it's changing everyone's consciousness.
Totally. Rosen mentioned Generation X, how boredom was just normal. You had to figure out what to do.
Yeah, I remember that. Building forts, staring at clouds. You didn't have a screen to immediately grab.
Exactly. And now kids are almost like conditioned to avoid boredom at all costs. Flick open an app, problem solved.
But maybe boredom isn't a problem to be solved. That's kind of Rosen's point, isn't it?
Yeah. She brings up Jerome Singer's work on positive constructive daydreaming.
Right.
And how it connects to openness to experience, that creative spark. So maybe being bored is actually good for us, a prerequisite for creativity.
It sounds counterintuitive in our productivity-obsessed world, but yeah. Scott Perry Kaufman listed the benefits of a wandering mind.
Mm-hmm. Like self-awareness, creative incubation.
Memory consolidation, planning for the future. Stuff that happens when you're not actively trying to do something.
And Stefan van der Stickel added that daydreaming can even bring back lost memories. And the brain activity looks a lot like the default network. You know, the brain's baseline when it's idle. It needs that time to sort things out.
So constantly selling that idle time might actually be preventing our brains from doing important background work.
That seems to be the implication. Rosen also talks about parents.
Oh, yeah. Teaching kids to handle boredom.
Right. Encouraging independent play, letting them figure it out instead of just handing over a tablet.
It's tough, though, but maybe necessary. She connects less empty time with rising anxiety.
Which makes sense. Reclaiming that idle time becomes almost radical.
She mentioned McLuhan and worry beads. Csikszentmihalyi and Microflow, ways people used to fill tiny gaps.
But now the default filler is often endless scrolling, which feels very different.
Definitely. And the Hacker News comments really ran with this, people talking about smartphone holidays.
Yeah, and finding they actually confronted difficult decisions they'd been avoiding. Just having the space to think.
Or just staring at the sky. Imagine that.
Someone even compared smartphone use to drug addiction cycles. That's pretty strong.
Yeah. And the idea that even books or music can be used to keep thoughts at bay, but phones are on another level.
The social impact, too, like always wearing headphones. You're just not available.
But even trying to disconnect can be hard. That anxiety bubble popping up.
True. Finding balance is key. Some found chess apps helped quiet the mind without the endless scroll.
And what are the truly essential apps? Uber, banking, maps came up. Maybe we don't need the phone for everything.
Right. Get a real camera.
But the fear of being disconnected is real, too. Missing calls, appointments.
Maybe future AI assistants could help manage that feeling.
Possibly. But the comments also stressed thinking for yourself, not letting the tech narrow your world.
And that phone habits can be changed. It takes conscious effort.
People listed things that helped them daydream. Lego, knitting.
Walking, showering.
Yeah. The shower idea, space free from the inner productivity critic. I get that.
Mm-hmm. And the evolutionary angle is interesting, too. Why do certain spaces encourage mind wandering?
The contrast between scrolling and reading print came up, too. Different engagement.
And navigating without GPS. Actually learning your surroundings.
Builds self-sufficiency, maybe.
Could be. And the core point about boredom being crucial for kids' development, maybe even linked to FOMO.
It all comes back to having agency over your own mind, right?
Yeah.
Where do you want to put your attention?
Exactly. A lot to think about there.
Okay, complete change of pace. Let's talk Daft Punk.
Yes. The vocal effects of Daft Punk. That video linked in the post was fascinating.
It really gets into how they got that robotic sound.
And did you notice the number 9,000 popping up in vocoder names? Roland VP9000, Eventide H9000.
Huh, yeah. Like, it's the magic number for robot voices.
Apparently, those old vintage vocoders like the Korg VC10 have a really unique sound. Modern digital ones are great, but maybe not exactly the same.
There's always something about the original hardware, isn't there?
Often, yeah. The discussion pointed out that many effects, vocoding, autotune, shifting, use similar tech underneath, like FFT, convolution.
So breaking down the sound and rebuilding it.
Pretty much. The specific way they process it and control it is what makes the difference. It's not just an effect. Often it's heavy processing.
Right, like Cher's Believe is mentioned. That effect is the song, almost. With Daft Punk, the voice becomes a whole new instrument.
Totally disguised. And specific vocoders, like the VSM-201, were mentioned as having a distinct sound you might pick out in a blind test.
Interesting. And it's not all FFT, right? There's LPC.
Linear prediction coefficients, yeah. And algorithms like Levinson-Durbin, they model the vocal tract in the time domain, a different approach.
Cool. And now there are software vocoders, too, like Vocodex and FL Studio. So anyone can play around with this stuff.
Exactly. Though the reactions on Hacker News were mixed, some find Daft Punk's sound cold, mechanical.
While others love that exact quality, like techno.
Yeah, it's subjective. And people brought up related stuff, the Tron, Legacy soundtrack, Kavinsky's Night Call.
Oh, yeah. Guy Manuel de Homem-Christo worked on those.
And Interstellar 5555, the anime movie using the whole Discovery album.
Yeah. Incredible concept. And of course, there are live shows, like Alive 2007, legendary.
Definitely push boundaries.
Okay, next up, OpenAI's structure change. Big news on Hacker News.
Yeah, moving from capped profit to a normal capital structure, stocked for everyone.
Their reason. They thought one AGI project would dominate, but now there are many, so they need a simpler structure. Plausible.
Well, the Hacker News comments were skeptical. A lot of people saw it as a way to ditch the profit cap, make fundraising easier, maybe dodge antitrust issues later.
So less about the changing landscape and more about, well, business.
That was a common interpretation. Or maybe an admission they don't see a winner-take-all scenario anymore.
Which brings up the whole AGI definition mess again. Is current Gen AI emerging AGI? Google DeepMind has a framework, but
it's still so fuzzy. And the comments rightly pointed out the huge difference between how we think and how LLMs think. It's not just autocomplete, but it's also not human cognition.
Right. Generality might be more of a spectrum.
And opinions split on whether AGI is inevitable. Some worry current LLMs might even make us less critical thinkers.
There was that feeling of the quiet before the storm in AI. Waiting for the next big architecture or training breakthrough.
Agentic models, RL-centric stuff.
Yeah. And the geopolitical angle came up too.
Like the U.S. potentially banning non-U.S. LLMs.
Yeah, for security. What would that mean for access to models like DeepSeek R1?
And how sticky are LLMs compared to, say, phone ecosystems? It feels easier to switch AI providers.
Which might mean brand recognition, Google, Microsoft becomes more important than having the absolute best model. At least for consumers.
But enterprises using APIs might care less about the brand and more about performance and cost.
True. There was also that interesting comment about OpenAI's original nonprofit structure reflecting a kind of liberal tech do-good era.
Contrasting with maybe a more authoritarian, self-centered view now.
It's a perspective. The counter was, if you're truly altruistic, why not open source with a strong copyleft license? Good point. Yeah. And the whole public benefit corporation PBC thing came under fire, too. Is it just branding?
Lots of skepticism there. And it all ties into the bigger ethics debate, the race to the bottom fears, the need for a tech counterculture.
The idea of democratic AI without democratic regulation also got called out.
Leading to the joke about the Democratic People's Republic of AI.
Yeah. And yeah, the complaints about ChatGPT being fluffy or manipulative keep coming up. It's a complex relationship.
Okay, shifting gears again. AI meets WinDBG. The ChatDBG project.
Right, integrating AI with debuggers. Initially WinDBG, now more LLDB, GDB, PDB, getting a lot of downloads.
A key point from the discussion was the use of a language server.
How does that help?
It gives the AI a much smarter way to find relevant info in the code. Instead of just feeding it tons of text, it can make specific queries via the language server.
Ah, so it saves tokens and gets better, faster answers because it knows where to look.
Exactly. The paper gave an example with the definition command using clanged to find symbol definitions precisely. Very efficient.
But some people asked if it's still useful for Windows debugging, since the focus shifted from WinDBG.
The response was that LODB and GDB can be used for Windows debugging too, so yes.
One Windows troubleshooter found it impressive, especially how quickly it was built. And they mentioned maybe binding it with local models.
Which would address the big security concern, right? Sending potentially sensitive process memory passwords, usernames, to an external AI server is risky.
Absolutely critical point. And there's the perspective that AI might solve the obvious crashes, the exceptions.
But the really tricky stuff. Logic bugs, race conditions, that still needs deep human expertise.
Some questioned if it deserved front page HN attention, while others saw it as an interesting first step.
Yeah, and it sparked appreciation for traditional debugging skills like crash dump analysis. That stuff is hard.
There's that worry about just copy-pasting AI solutions without really understanding the bug.
Definitely. Experienced folks stressed learning the OS, processes, assembler, and practice, practice, practice for crash dumps.
Bruce Dawson's blog and Advanced Windows Debugging got shout-outs as good resources.
And even with AI help, domain expertise is still key to guide the LLM effectively, though they're surprisingly good at reading disassembly sometimes.
The potential beyond crash dumps, like in static analysis or reverse engineering, is also pretty exciting.
Okay, last one. Max Wolf's piece. As an experienced LLM user, I don't use generative LLMs often.
Yeah, interesting perspective from someone who's been in the text generation game for a decade. Senior data scientist.
His main thing. He prefers hitting APIs directly like Claude Sonnet's API over web UIs like ChatGPT.
Why is that?
More control over the system prompt. He finds he can set rules, word limits, forbidden words more effectively there than jamming instructions into the main prompt.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
And he tweaks the temperature setting way down, like 0.0 to 0.3.
Lower temp means less randomness, right? More predictable.
Exactly. He thinks the higher default temperatures are a big reason for hallucinations, for the models making stuff up. He wants factual accuracy.
Interesting theory. What about his spicy takes? Agents, MCP.
Yeah, he sees agents and model as compute platform as basically rebranding the older tools idea. Useful, maybe standardized better with MCP, but not fundamentally new use cases.
So more hype than substance in those areas for him.
Kind of. He admits LangChain already did similar things, maybe more complicated now. He hasn't found killer apps for agents himself.
But he's open to being convinced otherwise if something cool pops up on Hacker News.
Right, which is a good attitude in this space. He also pushed back against the idea that LLMs are useless.
While still acknowledging the cost economics might be shaky for the big providers.
But he thinks open source models like Qwen3 or DeepSeek R1 could fill the gap if needed. LLMs are useful now, he argues, and the demand isn't going away.
What did the Hacker News comments make of all this?
Lots of agreement on the limits of automating code generation feedback loops. Models just spin the reels sometimes.
Yeah, I've seen that. The advice was often just start a new chat with a better prompt.
Right, rather than trying to argue the model into correcting itself. And the observation that quality degrades quickly after the first reply was common.
That's frustrating. Someone suggested library authors should just implement the functions models keep hallucinating.
Huh. If enough users expect it, maybe. People also shared stories of models guessing the tech stack wrong.
Like importing from the wrong Python library. Classic.
The advice. Tell the LLM your stack, or even ask it how it wants to approach the task, even if it suggests using an ORM you don't love.
There was that clarification about Python compiling to bytecode. Hallucinated functions are runtime errors, not compile errors.
Good point. And more anecdotes about agent modes leading to hallucination loops or bad code.
So human oversight is still crucial. Use the reject button, revise the prompt. Sometimes just do it yourself.
Definitely. But there were counterpoints too, especially on search. Some find ChatGPT's search genuinely better than Google now for certain things.
Oh, interesting. So maybe Wolf's take on search is already a bit dated.
Possibly. Things move fast. The comments noted the polarized discourse, extreme hype versus extreme dismissal.
Well, lots of people are just quietly getting stuff done with these tools.
Exactly. Mentions of tools like Cursor and Aider and their leaderboards for coding assistance.
The idea that maybe resistance comes from bad first experiences and not reevaluating as tech improves.
Yeah, and bold claims like LLMs are already better than Google for many info tasks.
We heard about big productivity gains using Cursor with models like Gemini 2.5 or Claude 3.7 for coding.
But emphasizing you still need to guide them, especially for complex tasks. System prompts are key for setting preferences, like use Svelte and TypeScript.
People shared specific workflows. AI for CSS, generating short scripts.
Using LLM Studio UIs instead of chat interfaces sometimes yields better results, or command line tools for specific tasks.
The issue of inconsistent JSON without structured definitions came up.
A practical pain point. So main uses now: learning new things, then implementing manually, and creating throwaway scripts.
The intern analogy came up again. Helpful. Needs guidance? Might mess up.
Yeah. One commenter found Wolf's tone a bit tiresome, despite the good content, like he was setting himself apart too much.
And the argument that we won't need massive AI infrastructure forever, thanks to local models getting better.
Plus, a lack of serious prompt engineering discussion for senior devs on HN.
And that crucial point, you can see AI's usefulness and still worry about it replacing jobs or driving down wages. Those aren't mutually exclusive.
History of automation shows that. And the observation that even neutral LLM comments can attract polarized reactions.
So wrapping up this deep dive from May 5th, wow, a lot covered.
Yeah, that tension between connectivity and needing empty time really stood out from the daydreaming discussion.
Definitely. And then the sheer creativity in using tech, whether it's Daft Punk's vocals or trying to get AI to help debug code.
And finally, the messy, fast-moving world of AI itself, OpenAI's shifts. How experienced users are actually using LLMs day to day. It's complex.
It really is. So a final thought for you listening. In this rush for efficiency and constant stimulation, what tiny rebellion can you stage for your own mind? A moment just to drift.
And as AI keeps charging ahead, how will you weave it into your life strategically? How do you use the tool without letting it dull your own unique ways of thinking and creating?
Good questions. We hope this deep dive gave you some food for thought. Feel free to explore the original Hacker News threads further.
Thanks for joining us on the HN Pod.